The products discussed in this podcast are only available in the United States.
Welcome to this Natixis podcast. I'm Carrie Grant, Vice President of Government Relations at Natixis Investment Managers. On this episode, we'll be discussing the outlook for the 2024 elections and the important policy issues for businesses and markets that are being debated in Washington today. I'm joined by Bob Marsh and Bob Stevenson, veteran political experts from the boutique lobby firm OBC. Between them, they have decades of experience working in the Senate, the House, the White House, in industry, and in political campaigns. Both have worked in Republican politics, but their firm is bipartisan, and they do have peers who have worked across the aisle on the Democratic side. So everything we'll be talking about today, from all the races to watch, the issues up for debate, we'll be talking about from a bipartisan and neutral perspective. Bob and Bob have a wealth of knowledge, and we're so glad to have them. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Carrie.
Glad to be here.
So Bob and Bob's a little confusing. Maybe we could make a distinction, and I'll call Bob Marsh Bob, call Bob Stevenson Robert.
Sounds great.
We're getting into the general election season, and it's shaping up to be a rematch that a large majority of Americans said they didn't want. Nevertheless, we're going to have a Biden or Trump presidency, and to win, they're going to have to overcome a fractured political base, inspire independence, and allay serious concerns about their personal liabilities and their age. Winning is going to be challenging, and they're going to have to speak for how they'll solve the big issues on Americans' minds. To me, that's probably immigration, inflation, tax policy, and abortion. Many of these policy areas could have an impact on the markets as well. I think it'd be great if we could talk about getting an early picture on how they could address these challenges.
And when you say they address these challenges, meaning during their election cycle, or do you mean once one of them gets elected at the time?
I think it's going to be interesting to talk about that distinction. How do they talk about issues during the election, and how do they talk about issues once they're elected, and what's the distinction and the difference?
I think there is a bunch of differences in that. And obviously, both candidates are driving certain issues right now, or will start right now, that sort of move and solidify their bases, and then at the same time, hopefully reach across the aisle or reach within the middle of the aisle to try to pull in votes that they need to carry those states. Remember, we always get down to the point, and I know people have seen this through politics now for a number of years when presidential elections have been close, is it's always really about a few states. And the interesting thing this year compared to 4 years ago, and even certainly more than 8 years ago, is the states have shifted a little bit. So it's a different kind of group of states. But in terms of the policies, Trump's going to stay with, you know, the border policy. He's going to stay with, you know, a weak foreign policy that Biden's talked about. He's going to talk about, you know, make America great again to try to drive his base to a thing. And Biden's going to talk about the fear of what democracy would be if Trump's going to get elected, the fact that the economy is actually pretty good right now under him. And once they get elected, it's a different game, particularly on issues like abortion, because then Congress has to come into play to actually make those kinds of differences.
I think you've summed it up pretty well in terms of the elections. This is going to be a long and fairly negative campaign. And yet the mood of the country at this point is very negative. Polling shows that neither candidate is popular, that 78% of the American people would prefer that they had another choice. But it's not just the presidential candidates. Congressional approval rating is 50 points underwater. The Supreme Court is underwater. Congress is underwater. Kamala Harris is underwater. It seems as though the American people are losing faith in their political institutions and their leadership. Whoever wins this race, the question is, are they going to be able to bring the country together, or are they going to try and jam through an agenda that only half of the country, or perhaps less than half of the country, supports? Because both these candidates are going to be lame ducks going into their term, it's going to make it difficult.
What's going to make this a different campaign?
I think Donald Trump makes this a different campaign based off of what's going on in his trials and legal concerns, but also just for the fact that his operation is somewhat different than it was 4 years ago. It's much more of a campaign operation than it's been in the past. 4 years ago, when the election was really, really close, I expect it to be just as close this go-round. They will push for people to come out and vote early because there's still early balloting in states like there were 4 years ago.
And there's a frustration on the part of younger Americans that they're being led by a group of people who they feel may not share their interests or their passions on some legislative items. So I do think that they're going to have to overcome it. One way Trump might be able to do it, for example, is his choice of vice president, somebody who can connect with younger voters. There's another component to the vice presidential selection, and that is this election, if you believe every poll, this is going to be an extraordinarily close election. It's going to be decided basically in seven states and in the suburbs of those seven states. And those voters are the ones who are going to either make or break these candidacies. So as they're considering a vice president, they have to consider those suburban voters in places like Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, in North Carolina, and what issues are important to them. The issues that are primary and on the front burner in the electorate's mind right now is immigration and border security. Number two, abortion. Number three, the economy, inflation, crime. Crime is certainly a big issue in the suburbs right now. So you have to consider when you're making a selection of vice president how that person will be able to help you on those issues and with that electorate. I'll tell you right now that of the candidates that have been mentioned, none of them are really suburban candidates per se. So that speaks to the possibility that you might get a dark horse.
Biden has had Vice President Harris as his running mate in the last election and served for him over the last 4 years. Her polling is pretty underwater, more than Trump, more than Biden. Is she going to be the candidate that he runs with in 2024?
I think so. I don't see how he changes out right now. I don't see there's anybody that kind of would be acceptable to the sort of the part of the base that she brings. Look, every vice president tends to be less popular than the president itself. Now, her numbers are historically low, and I also think it's a very, very, you know, even though it's not a heavy lifting job, it's a tricky job. I don't think she's hit her marks early on. I think she may be a better campaigner than people give her credit for. So we'll see what happens going forth. But I don't see much of a change.
I would just say, given the concern about Biden's age, and his ability to go another 4 years, this vice president is the most important vice president in an election since Watergate. And the question is, how much leeway will they give Harris, how much for her to really help allay any of the concerns that the electorate currently have about her? They're going to have to put her front and center.
So how do you think Biden approaches foreign policy in a second term? And how do you think Trump approaches it in a second term?
Well, I think in terms of China, there will be trade policy. That will be, and it will both have somewhat consistent trade policy. Trump may reinstitute some more of his tariffs and raise the tariffs level. But I think the real difference between these two candidates in terms of foreign policy is NATO and how we move forward in terms of our alliance with our allies in Europe. We have two new allies within NATO, with Sweden and Finland coming in. Trump has certainly used NATO in some way cases as a whipping boy to try and get them to meet their financial requirements. That has frightened some of our allies, whereas Biden has made a full commitment to NATO and helping Ukraine and combating what his administration sees as a more aggressive Russian foreign policy. And so I think initially, that is going to be the big difference between the two candidates.
I actually think Trump's been pretty crafty on this whole thing. Once he doesn't care about Ukraine. I mean, he's had a problem with Ukraine for a long time, obviously, and so he would never have backed them up. The NATO thing has always been around his mind that, you know, they should be paying their fair share. But it also fits with his Republican base, which is and it's been convenient to be able to shift that to the border. In other words, saying, look, we got to protect ourselves as opposed to this sort of America first policy, as opposed to, you know, keep fighting this long war in Ukraine and keep funding it. I think Gaza is a huge problem. You know, Ukraine's probably not as much of a political issue in the election as Gaza is. And Gaza is a big problem for Biden because of what it does in Michigan, what it does in some of his base. And I think it's also a big problem with the younger generation. There's not as much of an affinity for Netanyahu's Israel as we used to have for the original leaders of Israel and so forth. So that's a problem. To me, these kinds of issues probably impact state by state, district by district more. If you look at where the Republicans are vulnerable, California and New York, some of those seats, the issue of Israel in New York is huge in certain places. In California, can be certain areas. In Michigan, there's a big, you know, Muslim population in there that these things can be impactful. We've never seen a tighter Congress ever in terms of numbers than we have right now. Never. I mean, it's basically a two-vote margin in the House, one-vote margin in the Senate, basically. I mean, and it's significant. So,
are we going to have a similar Congress next time? Are we going to see a really big change in the House or in the Senate?
I think it's probably right now, if I had to bet, a Republican held Senate, Democrat held House, and then I'm not going to predict on the presidential race with the combination of that right yet. But
so I think one of the difficulties they're going to have in the next Congress is both these candidates are going to be lame ducks. If the Republicans take back the Senate, and it will be by a small margin, two, maybe three seats at most, the map favors the Democrats. So if Biden were to win and the Democrats were to control the House, there would be an opportunity for them to use those 2 years before 2026 to pound home messages to try and win back the Senate. And I think it's the same if Trump wins. They will try and spur action on a number of items because they recognize that they may only have a 2-year window. And the Democratic House and Hakeem Jeffries will do everything that they possibly can to deny them that opportunity. So that's a long way of saying I anticipate a lot of politics going forward, and I don't see a very productive Congress the next time out with two lame duck presidents.
Yeah, and they kind of have to be on some things, right? Or there are some big issues that are coming up in the next Congress. So one that I think, you know, a lot of people will be thinking about and listening out for is how are the candidates and at the presidential level, but also in Congress, talking about taxes.
So that is going to be the biggest issue going forward in 2025 is the expiration of the 2017 tax cuts under the Trump administration. It totals $3.1 trillion. And that is what the American people will have to pay over a 10-year window if they allow these tax cuts to expire. Now, both candidates have suggested that they want to continue the tax cuts in some fashion, although they differ in how they. Trump would just like to extend them at the $3.1 trillion level. Biden would like to continue the tax cuts only for those people making less than $400,000, and he would not only tax people making $400,000 or more, but in his State of the Union, he unveiled a whole host of tax increases on people making more than $400,000, and particularly on people making more than $1 million. So what we see there is a tax battle, traditional class warfare, more spending paid for by more taxes.
So the other thing I think Biden said that they might change is the corporate tax rate level, right? So the 2017 Act had extended that, you know, forever, indefinitely, until it's revisited. But Biden's saying that he would like to change that.
Right. He would like to raise it back from it was reduced to 21%, and Biden would like to bring it back to 28%, where it was before Trump took office.
And my guess that it only happens if he controls the Senate and
right.
the House. So if it's a bifurcated Congress, I don't think anything drastic happens. Maybe there's some extension on some popular tax cuts.
You're right in that it was going to take some compromise to get, for example, any sort of extension of the tax cuts done, even a small exempt. And it's going to require that Republicans consider taking some of the Democratic priorities like expanded child tax credit, EITC, to get what they want in terms of an extension of the 2017 tax cuts. I think that will be the largest agenda item and the most difficult one, in addition to our annual spending battles that go on over doing our appropriations bills, which is something Congress is not very good at accomplishing. I mean, there are 12 appropriations bills. We haven't passed all of them in one year since the 90s.
What do you think, if anything, that happens after the next election on Social Security reforms?
Well, that's the elephant in the room, right? But it's not just the total deficit that we're running. It's the annual deficits, and it's the cost of having to pay for that, which is an account that's been rising at tremendous levels, right? So now servicing the debt is the third largest item in the budget, and it's grown tremendously over the last couple of years where rates were high. So it was great when rates were down close to zero, 1%. Now the government's having to service that debt at enormous costs, and we have a deficit that even under a more conservative plan will grow to be somewhere between 104 and 106 percent of GDP, which is the highest level since World War II. That has an impact on our economy. It has an impact on Americans' lives, inflation being a huge issue, and yet here we're continuing to go spending at record levels. Sooner or later, the piper is going to have to be paid. And in terms of Social Security, the trust fund is going to be expired by 2033, 2034, and people will get 78% rather than 100% of what they're due.
I don't think you're going to see either one of them talk about it. They'll talk about it in the generic fashion. When one of them gets elected president, do they do anything? I think it's more likely that Biden tries to act as a lame duck and do some things that have significance, whether it's balancing doing the budgetary things. I don't know. It may be something more like some kind of a health care thing or something that's more of a progressive agenda item. And I don't know if, you know, attacking Social Security and that kind of things aren't necessarily progressive. Trump, on the other hand, I don't see him as serious in terms of addressing those kinds of issues.
Solving the deficit issue, curtailing our deficit requires some sort of political pain, right? You're either going to raise taxes or you're going to cut spending in some way. Politicians aren't very good at administering pain. And that's one of the reasons why we've gotten into this soup. I mean, the last time we had a balanced budget was in the late 90s, and then the wheels came off, and we've been running trillion-dollar deficits year after year after year. Now, Biden did, in his State of the Union, come up with a measure for Medicare. He was going to raise the Medicare tax from 3.8 to 5% for people, again, making over $400,000. So, but that's really just the tip of the iceberg.
What are the other issues people maybe don't have top of mind that this Congress and the next Congress are probably going to deal with?
I think certainly issues like TikTok's personal security, that kind of thing is important. I think climate change is not going away. Crime is an issue that's not going away. I would also say that inflation is still there, and it's particularly pocketbook kinds of things. You know, it's the grocery store. The grocery store is really the number one thing in people's mind and the headache in terms of their economy. It's groceries and able to find a place to live, the housing costs and those kinds of things.
I read something the other day saying that 20% of voters this election are going to be Gen Z. And how do you think those voters get their information?
Donald Trump is certainly much better at using social media than Joe Biden. But I think most of their news will come not from the two campaigns, but those elements that surround the campaigns, the sock puppets, the different organizations, news organizations that pop up, some of them real, some of them not so real. They'll get their news via posts on Instagram or TikTok or whatever social media app they're looking at. So they, whether it's climate change or the environment or healthcare, they can read specific information coming from those sites. The days of ABC News and Walter Cronkite and all that, that's gone. Even the local newspaper, that's gone. We're now talking maybe the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post, but the concern there is deepfakes, is the fact that a lot of information that's going to be flooded through these social media sites is going to be false. It's inaccurate. It's made up. And yet there's no gatekeeper to make that determination. So a lot of the information that people will be basing judgments on may not be true.
Can I say one more thing about the election cycle? There's always a surprise between now and the election that will come
out. October surprise.
So it may not be the quote-unquote October surprise. But there's always an issue that comes out that's going to drive a certain point. And again, we keep harping on how close this can be. It's very close, and it can make a big difference at the last minute. It could be, Biden flubbing up again, or it could be Trump doing something, or whatever. It could be something that doesn't have anything to do with either one of them, but that happens,
In 2016, there was a third-party candidate, right? Johnson, and he took 3 or 4% of the vote in swing states. And this election, we're likely to see one, and that's Robert Kennedy. There will be people who don't like either of these candidates. We talked about how they're unpopular. And they'll say, I'm going to vote for somebody else. I'm going to vote for Kennedy. Who are those voters? And where are they taking the votes, the lion's share of the votes from? Or is that still to be determined?
The polling shows that thus far, Bobby Kennedy takes equally from both Trump and Biden. However, the Biden people will tell you that they're more concerned about the votes coming out of their hide, and that they feel like that could tip some of the states in Trump's direction. And the polling bears that out. If you look at, for example, in Georgia recently, Trump won when all 5 candidates, not just Robert F. Kennedy, but also the Green candidate. Now, it took, basically, they took 9 points off of the table from the 2 candidates, and it resulted in Biden losing to Trump by 4 points.
Well, and the other thing is, remember, so Bobby Kennedy's not on every ballot. I think we figured out that right now he's on about half the swing state ballots. He may be able to get on a couple more. I don't know if he can get on all. So that ends up being part of the equation.
Well, I am very grateful for you all coming, and I really enjoyed talking with you today. I hope people found this insightful, and thanks, and I hope we can do this again.
Thank you.
Happy. Thank you for having us.
Important information. Natixis Distribution, LLC is a limited purpose broker-dealer and the distributor of various registered investment companies for which advisory services are provided by affiliates of Natixis Investment Managers. Natixis Distribution, LLC and Natixis Advisors, LLC are located at 888 Boylston Street, Suite 800, Boston, Massachusetts, 02199. 800-862-4863. im.natixis.com. The above referenced entities are business development units of Natixis Investment Managers, the holding company of a diverse lineup of specialized investment management and distribution entities worldwide. The investment management subsidiaries of Natixis Investment Managers conduct any regulated activities only in and from the jurisdictions in which they are licensed or authorized. Their services and the products they manage are not available to all investors in all jurisdictions. The provision of this material and/or reference to specific securities, sectors, or markets within this material does not constitute investment advice, or a recommendation or an offer to buy or to sell any security, or an offer of any regulated financial activity. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, and expenses of any investment carefully before investing. The analyses, opinions, and certain of the investment themes and processes referenced herein represent the views of the portfolio manager, S, as of the date indicated. These, as well as the portfolio holdings and characteristics shown, are subject to change. There can be no assurance that developments will transpire as may be forecasted in this material. Past performance information presented is not indicative of future performance. Add tracks 6487072-1-2. Expiration date, July 31st, 2024. Pod 53, March 2024.